Blog Talk Radio.
Reach the
audience. Pull up right there. You got it. Renegade. Why? Radio.
I am Old Head and New Jack, swinging on the serious B-star of Sephardette, street minister and priestess, new African hippie, juju woman I am, wearing dashikis over denims, mud cloth newsboy cap, sideways cocked over free-flowing locks. The spiritual mother messenger of power has returned, strong enough to go against the flow, product of my ancestors, yet my own trademark, launching my own publicity campaign. But my propaganda is not about me. It's about the hypnotized community which bought into the Everything's Cool commercials. See me and know I am your caffeine clarion call. The alarm clock you can't shut off.
The sister blowing up your cell phone.
The renegade voice outside your window screaming, get up!
Get up!
Because it ain't just about waking up. It's about being about our business. Knowing that Dinkins' so-called beautiful mosaic is a myth. I've been battling life on the real. Carpetbagger landlords. Light paychecks when bills are due. Clerks checking out my skin tone before checking out my order. Arrogant young bloods cryptically fighting on the wrong side and playing into genocide. Crossing streets to miss crossfire when I'm just trying to get home. I'm not trying to get fixated on superficial prettiness to lull me back to sleep. The Big Brother war is on. We ain't won yet. Jump in or get jumped on, but first you gotta see what's coming down on you. The indoor-outdoor prison-industrial complex. Slavery ain't gone nowhere. The boss man's drugs, unjust jailing, and me-ism slow the roll, but we've got to finish what we started in the 60s and 70s. Just bringing back the fashions ain't getting it. So, I battle, making beats on my djembe, my ankh at the ready, tucked in my backstrapped guitar bag, sporting lapa, minister's collar, medicine bag, and tank saying motherland, or t-shirt emblazoned with the U.S. and a brother's smiling face reminding you we were here first. Rejecting poison flesh in my teeth to put meat on my bones. Drinking the pure water of my venerated ancestors' river. I am the byproduct of my ancestors, a renegade voice from the mythic mosaic hollering up and down the road for the generations coming up. Tayahimba, we stand together as a nation. Harambe, pull together. Ashe, we have the power to make it so. Amen.
Renegade. Why?
Shalom, peace and freedom. Welcome to another edition of Renegade Wise Woman Radio. I am your host and producer, Queen Mother Imaku, and it is a pleasure to be back with you this evening. The show last week got so many raves. It really makes you really excited to come back and get back up on the horse and produce another show. And we've got quite a full show, as was last week's show. I want to welcome one of our correspondents to Renegade Wise Woman Radio. Sachette, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here. Hetepu, everyone. Hetepu.
Now, here's what's interesting. I was just informed that Sachette has a slumber party going on right now.
Yes.
It's not an adult slumber party. It's a children's slumber party. So how did that come to be on this weeknight?
Well, her best friend is here from Oklahoma. They've been knowing each other since birth, but her friend and family, the family moved away. So every summer, and since then, unfortunately, the couple had, and the father came back home to live, and the mother went back home to live. And so what happens is she comes home every summer to and stays with dad. And so they end up basically playing like 7 days a week if they can, because they don't see each other all year. And so
okay.
Since we are We do, since we are basically kind of sort of taking a bit of a break, we did some spelling activities and some other things, but we're taking it light. Summer school and homeschool is just kind of taking it light, not really just stopping altogether. So
okay.
She didn't come over until about 6.
So, okay, this is a little bit of a break, but by the same token, this is another label for babysitting.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
I mean,
exactly.
Be honest here, you know. So I look forward, though, to listening to the advice that you have to our audience, for those who are thinking about homeschooling, for those who are homeschooling, regarding the question of self-discipline and discipline when you're homeschooling. I know we approached that topic last week,
mm-hmm.
and so we'll be catching up with that later on in the show. But let me let our audience know who we have. This is really a wonderful, wonderful lineup. We have Milton Alamati, who is the publisher of Black Star News. For those of you who are not familiar with Black Star News, you can go right now to blackstarnews.com. For those of you who are at the Blog Talk Radio site, there is a link in the description that you can just click on. And this brings the latest, most topical news to our people. And we'll be talking with Brother Alamati about some of the headlines and also the state of black media today, in particular with black newspapers. You know, many of you know that I have written for a number of black newspapers, and many of them are no longer here. That's unfortunate. We always face challenges in being able to provide funding that will keep our enterprises going, and so we'll be looking forward to having discussion with Brother Alamati. We also will be hearing from an amazing performance artist who I had the pleasure of seeing on Sunday. She was performing at the same venue that I was at. There was the Queen of the Mic venue. You know, last time we had our show, we heard from Teach the Writer, got a chance to see her perform in person. She was wonderful. And meet all these other ladies. That night was unbelievable. The talent was just poof. And so this artist goes by the name La Chocolate Box. She'll be explaining about that later. It's probably not what you think. Get your mind out the gutter, okay? Just get it out of the gutter. but she also has an amazing story of triumph and overcoming. She is not just a performance artist, by the way, and spoken word artist, but she is also an actress. She is a fashion designer and a stylist, and she is an event host. Forward to talking to her in the 11 o'clock hour, followed by, at 11:30, Baba Zaid Mohammed, very well known to many in the activist community. He is known as the Minister of Information for the New Black Panther Party and for People's Organization for Progress, of which I am a member. And but beyond that, he's an amazing poet, spoken word artist, and he came to audition for the Akeru Afrohemian Ensemble, our new theater ensemble, and surprised the heck out of me, he did a soliloquy from Othello, and it turned out that he was a trained New York actor, having studied under the Sandy Meisner method. I was floored, and he is tremendous. But it's not surprising, though, because whenever he stands up to speak, or even if he sends a text, there is a wonderful presence even in the text, you know. So anyway, I know that many are looking forward to hearing from Baba Zaid Mohammed. We'll be talking about the state of activism today and also finding out a little bit more about the New Black Panther Party. And also we'll be hearing some of his poetry. And so we've got a very, very full show. Now, Sister Karen Hatter is sick with this nasty virus that's going around, and unfortunately she won't be joining us this week, but we will be hearing from Sister Soyl Edwards at 10:45. She's due to call in to bring us a holistic weight loss tip. Yes. I mean, well, listen, she's got an amazing story, too. I mean, she has, well, she's been posting images of herself with sort of like a before and after, you know. I mean, you really almost can't believe it's a person, you know. But she decided that she just was not going to live like that anymore, and she just wanted to lose weight, and she did it, and she's kept it off. So in addition to her information that she'll be giving to us about essential oils and living well, she'll be sharing weight loss tips from a natural and healthy perspective in terms of also doing cleansings and all this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, for that I'm grateful. You know, I just came from doing a memorial for Dr. Maya Angelou, and it was hosted by a local activist group here in Elizabeth. And if you know, I'm in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Yeah, we have things happening here. Yeah, we do. And so the lovely dedication, Brother Salam Ismail, who is a very, very well-known activist, he pulled it together, and I had the privilege of being able to read some of Dr. Maya Angelou's poems. And, you know, there are so many that she wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically just know two.
Right.
Well, the public, Still I Rise and Phenomenal Woman. And that's because
right.
they are truly considered classics, okay? However, I must tell you that she wrote an outstanding number of activist and consciousness poems. And
yes.
I'd like to share her. Yeah, right? I mean, you know, I think it's important that we understand that because, listen, I'm sure that many of you who are on social media saw all the images that have been taken of her over the years in African garb, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so,
right.
Yes, right, did you? And so she did have a strong level of social consciousness. And so let me share these... these three poems. Now, this is from her book, Poems. And they're collected poems from Just Give Me a Cool Drink of Water Before I Die, that poetry book, and also her books, Oh, Pray My Wings Are Gonna Fit Me Well, and Still I Rise, and Shaker, Why Don't You Sing?
Mm-hmm.
This, and so it's interesting that these three are coupled, well, not coupled, because there are three of them. They're placed together in triplicate, back to back. This first one is called Africa. Thus she had lain, sugarcane sweet, deserts her hair, gold in her feet, mountains her breasts, two Niles her tears. Thus she had lain, black through the years. Over the white seas, rime white and cold, brigands ungentled, icicle bold, took her young daughters, sold her strong sons, churched her with Jesus, led her with guns. Thus she was lain. Now she is rising. Remember her pain. Remember the losses, her screams, loud and vain. Remember her riches, her history slain. Now she is striding, although she had lain.
Mm.
Second is called America. The gold of her promise has never been mined. Her borders of justice not clearly defined. Her crops of abundance, the fruit and the grain, have not fed the hungry nor erased that deep pain. Her proud declarations are leaves on the wind. Her southern exposure black death did befriend. Discover this country, dead centuries cry. Erect noble tablets where none can decry. She kills her bright future. She rapes for a sou. Then entraps her children with legends untrue. I beg you, discover this country. And last, for us, who dare not dare. Be me a pharaoh. Build me high pyramids of stone and question. See me the Nile at twilight and jaguars moving to the slow, cold draft. Swim me Congo. Hear me the tales of alligators flapping waves that reach a yester shore. Swing me vines beyond the baobab tree and talk me chief. Sing me birds flash color lightning through bright green leaves. Taste me fruit, its juice free falling from a mother tree. Know me, Africa.
Nice.
They're powerful, aren't they?
Yes, I have to say I haven't heard any of those. And it's funny that you bring that up quickly because I decided to go and look for some poems today by Maya that I hadn't heard of. I came across one called On the Pulse of Morning. It's kind of long,
oh, yeah.
On the Pulse of Morning. And I was just contemplating and thinking over it earlier today. I was like, yeah, I've never heard of this one. So, yeah, it's awesome. I already know I'm going to just jump in and rediscover and look for, you know, more Maya Angelou because I just, you know, and I have to say, when I listen to her speak, she says Maya Angelou. So I keep trying to remember to say Maya Angelou because I watch her on Oprah. Uh-huh.
We have a tendency to say Lou because L-O-U in, you know, in the American vernacular is Lou. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's very,
exactly.
Yes, and even have found that name. You know, you really have to get into her autobiographies to get the full breadth of how she came to be. And truly, the fact is that she is an inspiration because, like I shared today at the dedication, there are so many things that stay with me regarding Maya Angelou, but I'll tell you, what really has stayed with me has been the fact that her voice was validated by her uncles who took up for her by handling her abuser.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of world would we have today, at least in our community, if we made people accountable across
right.
the board? If
across
we made people accountable, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I think that we would have many women who feel a lot safer.
Mm-hmm.
There would be
yeah.
more of a tendency to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there would be a great deal more respect for those who have been victimized. And I know that with my own situation, I prayed and begged for someone who would avenge me, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be
mm-hmm.
a very difficult thing, you know, because
mm-hmm.
especially
it can
today,
be.
Yeah, especially today when there is so much focus on just yourself and, you know, so forth. Well, what are your thoughts? What really struck you the most about Dr. Angelou?
Oh, okay. I thought you were meaning in particular the last section where you were talking about if we could just have those who violate us avenged. You know, how would we feel? But yes, for talking about Dr. Maya Angelou, Dr. Maya Angelou. like I said, I feel like she is, I feel like I'm going to have to study her. It's like, and no disrespect or to make it sound weird, but like an onion that I have to peel because
mm-hmm.
I feel like I took her presence for granted a bit. I did get a chance to see her. She came here in 2013, so I went to see her when she came to Belmont. And like I said, it was beautiful the way she even just made you feel when she was talking in between the poetry. She just made you feel like she was right there talking to you, and the venue was just intimate as long as she was talking. It was crazy at how magical she seemed and how smart she was. And I remember I was just furiously trying to write notes, and I was looking for those notes, too, for the show, just in case, and I can't find those notes. I'm so mad. I wrote them on, like, a program or something, but I couldn't even write fast enough, and I felt like I was missing her presence by trying to write, you know, everything she was saying anyway, so I just stopped doing that. But I just remember being overwhelmed and knowing that I needed to know more about her, more than those two poems. Then being a homeschool mother and everything, life just kind of gets in the middle, and I'm wrapped up in that. And next thing I know, she passed. And so I feel like, you know, I missed, I mean, her energy is here, but I still feel like I wish I had, I don't know, connected while she was still on this plane. So I just know I've got a lot to learn.
You mentioned homeschool, and I think now actually would be a good time for you to share your information with us regarding homeschool. There's an article that will be posted on this topic that you'll be talking about today over at Renegade Wise Woman magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But can you share now with us about the topic of this?
Sure. On the last show, you asked me about discipline, and you had mentioned, coming across folks who saying they're homeschooling, but they're on Facebook all day. And and that's true. You can, if you don't pay attention, the social media can suck you in. So, but I did start a little while ago, started when my daughter was in pre-K, and now she's finished up with fifth grade, and we're moving to sixth. And often there we did have 1 year or so of public school. But anyway, when I first started, I knew that I was going to need to focus, but I didn't have any other children, so, I just jumped all in. And I remember the first thing that I researched was to set a motto and a mission. Like, as far, just get that set up right away. If you know you're going to homeschool, what is your motto? What is your mission? And that gives you a focus, at least a general focus, off the top. And for me, focus is part of self-discipline is why I'm bringing that up. So we created a motto and a mission. And then the other things that I do as far as on a day-to-day, fast forward to what I do right now, is I rely on all kinds of notes, just anything from Post-it notes to the organizational apps you can put on your smartphones or tablets, notepads. I have tons of notepads for different things. This is my notepad for my personal study, and this is my notepad for homeschool, and this is my notepad for, you know, bills. So I have that all organized kind of in both in writing, and I'm kind of heavy on my computers and tablets and junk. Also, I set reminders. Speaking of tablets and things, I put my due date for all kinds of tasks, because part of staying focused is making sure the rest of your life is organized as well. So, make sure your bills and stuff are handled with your reminders or your notes, however you want to do it, tack it up on the refrigerator or something. But stay on point with the rest of your tasks. And so homeschool, you can focus on that. But, yeah, so I set reminders about everything I need to do as a household administrator, what I call myself. And then you set some study hours and you stick with them. I use a prepared curriculum, actually, with on a site called Time for Learning, and we follow that. We sign on every day or every other day, and we do the assignments as they're listed. I don't really kind of go into too much scheduling. We just sign on because it's an online curriculum, kind of like a online textbook. They give her different videos and text to read, and different. Sometimes there's homework assignments or resources that we need to print off, worksheets. We'll do that, and then she'll sign back on, take a quiz or a chapter test or whatever. In the meantime, I'll do some worksheets. I'll design some worksheets myself to kind of support that and other curriculum support. But if you use a prepared curriculum that works for you, that saves a lot of time and helps you stay focused as well. I tend to use a lesson planning that is not really traditional. I journal, and that saves time for me. I don't do a lot of heavy record keeping. I just journal my plans for study for the following day, and then I journal as the day goes on, did we get that done? And I also make sure that I forgive myself when everything that I've planned doesn't get done, because then that throws my focus off. I'll get a little panicky. So I just kind of calmly move what we maybe didn't get to that day to the next day. Also, turn your TV off during study time. We only have on videos or documentaries that pertain to learning or what we're learning, and I don't get into TV at all, and I don't take phone calls, which kind of goes back to the sticking to your study hours. So sometimes you do have to take a call here and there, but usually once we actually get into a good the school year pretty good, I just kind of stop on the phone calls during that study time, and I'll text people back and let them know we're studying. Do you need anything? Make sure it's not an emergency, but generally I kind of stay off the calls and the text. Because there have been a couple of times where I noticed I've been on this phone with a call, you know, and my children are like, at least my oldest is like, I need help with this. And I'm like, you know, okay, let me focus. So the phone and TV can definitely, and Facebook, just stay off of Facebook. They will zap your time, just totally.
Okay.
So those are pretty much my tips.
Those are some excellent tips. And if anybody has any further question, they can visit the Akio. I'm sorry, good Lord, mix up my shows. Renegade Wise Woman.
Renaissance Woman as well.
Yes. And also, how can they reach you?
I have actually started, I just purchased the domain SouthernSachette.com, and I'm getting that set up. So right now, if they go there, I actually just have it linked to my WordPress blog under the same name, which has the Maya Angelou poem that I came across today in honor of her. But that was my inaugural post for SouthernSachette.com. Otherwise, I have not, honestly haven't established which way I want to go as far as communication. I'm on Twitter. That's Southern Sachette, I believe. And then also I am on Facebook as well, but that is my government name, I guess.
I'll have to make sure that your links, your appropriate links, go to the Renegade Wise Woman magazine site, okay? We'll handle it that way. Now we have our other correspondent. We have Soil Edwards, who is our holistic mystic. Soil, are you there? I see her number here.
I'm here.
Okay. How are you?
I'm fine. Greetings, everyone.
How has the week been for you?
Hectic. It's been busy.
Okay. I was sharing with everyone before how you have been posting information regarding your tremendous weight loss. I mean, to see you now, people would not guess that you look the way you did before. Not that you look bad before, you know, but you know, significant weight loss can really change an appearance. And so you have brought us an holistic weight loss tip this evening. Can you share your information with us, please?
Well, I wanted to share about detoxing and fasting when you start your holistic healing, because that's very important. That's a key. That's a key point of your healing, because you want to detox all the bad things out of your body. I wanted to share a lemonade diet with everybody. It's a fast that you can go on. You get lemon, raw honey, cayenne pepper, and spring water. what I did was I took like a jug of it. I made like two jugs of it, and I would fast from like morning to probably sunfall. You know, once the sun set, I ended my fast and probably ate something raw. See, I'm a vegetarian, so I don't eat any meat or anything. It's best to do these type of fasts with herbs and lemon, with no meat, if possible. You know, you can do like baked fish or, you know, chicken. Or I would really stay away from chicken too, because the FDA just now letting everybody know that has cancer, you know, carcinogens in it. Yeah, I would recommend herbs and the lemon detox, and just try to go raw and do more fruits and veggies, and that just gets rid of all the waste in your body, and the lemon's just going to pull all the toxins out, and the cayenne pepper is going to kind of like suppress your appetite. And, you know, I mean, things start happening. You start feeling different. You know, the experience isn't only physical. It's very spiritual as well. You know, you begin to open up. You hear and you see things clearer. So it's a very spiritual journey when you're detoxing and fasting. It's best to do it at the same time. I try to, when I fast, when I detox, I go ahead and fast at the same time. You know, give my prayers or whatever I'm doing. You know, however I spend my time fasting, that's what you do. Just focus on yourself and try not to consume any flesh, if possible. It is possible. It sounds hard at first, but once you keep doing these regularly, you just don't do this one time and just, okay. No, you got to keep doing it, you know, throughout the whole healing phase. You just can't stop. So you can take a break, but, you know, and then once you keep doing it, your body is not going to even crave the sweets. It's not going to even crave that Snickers. It's going to crave, like, you know, the strawberry, like it's supposed to crave. You're going to be able to actually know what your body wants now, because, you know, sometimes when we're unhealthy, we don't know what our body wants. We think it wants McDonald's. That's not exactly what it wants. It may want some type of protein or, you know, something that McDonald's is giving off, but, you know, once you start detoxing, your body starts, you know, working together. It's one like it's supposed to, and you know exactly what to put in your body, and then you slowly go away from the meat. I started off on fish and, you know, just seafood diet, but now I don't even eat any meat at all. My stomach can't even take it. And, yes,
okay, so
that's what I want to share.
Okay.
That's the beginning of it. You know, before you start adding the stones and the crystals and stuff like that, it's very essential to get physical and to, you know, detox.
So you're talking about this fast. How long? About how long of a period? I mean, how many days? How many weeks? You know, how long should you fast?
When I first started off, I kind of guided myself through it because, you know, it's a 7-day detox. But I started off, like, you know, for 3 days. I did it 3 days from, like, 8 o'clock a.m. to probably, like, 6 p.m. in the evening. And then I eat something light, like a salad, or even, you know, steam me some vegetables. You know, when you cook your vegetables, try not to cook them all the way because, you know, the less cooked they are, the more protein is still in your vegetables and whatever you're cooking. Sauteing. But it's a 7-day detox. Just start off slow. Whatever is comfortable for you. If you just want to do it for one day, whatever, you know, just start off to what's comfortable for you. Don't, you know, I can tell you how I did it, but it's really up to you and what your body can take.
Okay.
And it's a slow it's a slow process to get used to it, but the weight starts dropping off.
Well, I mean, I'd like you to share again what that recipe is.
You get some spring water. I don't have the exact measurements because I really didn't think we were going to be talking about this tonight. But you can get you some spring water, some raw. It has to be raw honey. Any honey at the store, most of it is filtered, so there's really no minerals in it, you know, once they finish filtering it and then the color's gone. So you have to get raw honey. Lemons, try to get organic lemons. Learn your labels because a lot of the lemons that may be in the store are GMO. And so you have to get cayenne pepper. Try to get the organic. If not, just get what you can afford. and just use that. Just make like 2 gallons. Just put them in a refrigerator and just drink. Try to drink 1 gallon a day if you're, you know, if you're fasting. 1 gallon a day, or you know, pace yourself for a half a gallon. Just start off however you feel you can do.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think it's really important also what you're saying about making sure that you just you don't go overboard. And
yes,
that you,
because you can, yeah, you can, you'll send your body through shock if you do something like that. You probably pass out or something, you know, get to vomiting and stuff like that, because, you know, your body has to get used to, you know, it's pulling all of this stuff out, and you may feel heavy, and this is the time you do need to get your crystal to get grounded. Because you're gonna be pulled, it's gonna feel you're gonna feel weighed down, like you know you're actually being centered to the earth, and it's just draining all that you know that junk out of you back into, you know, back into where it came from, out of your body. So,
well, I really appreciate you sharing that, and you know we're actually getting ready to go into our fasting season. For those of us who are comedic, many of us do see this fast for 42 days, and it starts on June. I'm trying to get our guest to patch in here. He's having a hard time calling in. Let me just make sure he's got the right number here. But our season begins on summer solstice and ends 42 days later, which usually brings you to somewhere around the beginning of August, late July, early in our tradition here on the East Coast, usually Weprim Put is designated within the first one or two weekends of August, during the time that's known as the Dog Days of Summer, and coordinating with the heliacal rise of Septet, the dog star. And so anyway, the way that fasting is approached is a very individualistic thing. I mean, it used to be that it was taught that you do 21 days raw and then 21 days juicing. It's rough.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I think I would disappear. I'm extremely thin. I'm not quite sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have found that it's a bit too stringent, and especially because of the fact that I have the seizure disorder that I do. I found I was having more seizures during that time, you know,
mm-hmm.
than not. So what I've learned is to tell people to modify it according to a way that makes sense to them. And you know, Sister Soil, I think I'm going to try your way this time. I mean, I haven't done the 21-21 in years because, you know, I don't think I'd be talking to you right now if that's the case. You know, there are plenty of people who have and feel all nice and happy at the end of the summer because they're all nice and trim, but then a few weeks later you see them and they've just bulked up again, you know. But I like the idea of doing the lemonade mixture and then having something light at night. I like that a lot. So I'll keep you all posted and let you know how it works out.
I found the, while Sister Soil was speaking, I found the Master Cleanse recipe online. It looks like it's MasterCleanseSecrets.com, which we're not trying to shout it out, but I know the recipe is on there. They have a single serving recipe and the other one is a 60-ounce daily serving recipe.
Yeah, you know, somebody else a few years back had recommended it to me, you know, just in terms of doing a general quick cleanse for, a few days, that kind of thing. I like this approach. I'm going to try it and to know. And so, Sister Soil, can you please let everybody know how they can reach out to you? Our guest has finally patched in. Give thanks and praises. So can you please let them know what way they can reach you for not only more coaching and information on holistic weight loss, but also on your essential oils and the other fine holistic products and services that you provide?
I can be reached at spiritualascensions.com. Ascensions is spelled A-S-C-E-N-D-S-I-O-N. Or either you can come and join me on my Facebook page, the fan page, Spiritual Ascensions, or Soils Ascensions. Or you can go look up my article on renegadewisewoman.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. Find her writings there as well, and make sure that all the appropriate contact information is there, too. But the link for her fan page is definitely there. And so I want to thank both of you ladies. If hang in for a little while before you end up getting summoned by the kitties, just to you all listening to this wonderful interview that we have coming up, and please welcome you too. And you know, this way, if you have any questions too, but this is why I'm going to let you go and connect with you tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay.
Have a good
Thank
night.
Thank you so much.
Good okay. Good night.
You're listening to Renegade Wise Woman Radio, and it is here on the Main Street Universe Network. Please visit Renegade Wise Woman at www.renegadewisewoman.com. And I am very pleased to be able to welcome our next guest who is finally able to get through. I'm finding that Blog Talk is really something of an unusual, I almost said beast. I don't want to say that. I love you, Blog Talk. But something of an unusual animal anyway, in terms of being able to get through some of the glitches and so forth. But still, it is an amazing thing to be able to have radio over the airwaves in this way. Black Star News is a very widely known and respected black newspaper and newspaper in general. And it is published by our next guest, Milton Alamadi, who originally hails from Uganda and has been here in the United States bringing levels of consciousness that are profound and absolutely necessary. And Brother Milton, I would like to welcome you to Renegade Wise Woman Radio.
Thank you so much. And my apologies, number one. I believe I had been dialing a wrong number, actually. That's probably why I was delayed. And now, after that kind of introduction, you know, I feel like I shouldn't even say anything in case I disappoint people, you know.
Well, you know, I hear you quite often on WLIB.
On Gary Bird?
Yes, with Gary Bird, mm-hmm. You know, on both LIB and BLS. And you're mostly on, it seems like I mostly hear you on LIB, but because Gary Bird, for those of you who don't know, WhatsApp Gary Bird hosts a show on Sunday evenings on WBLS from 7 to 9, and then on WLIB, the sister station, which is AM, then he's heard from 9 until, I believe, midnight.
Mm-hmm,
and,
that's right.
Yes, and so, he is the place everybody tunes into in the evening. In the morning, we listen to the Brothers on Open Line, and then in the evening, we listen to Imhotep Gary Bird. And so you are a frequent visitor there and bringing quite pertinent information regarding our community. I want to jump in and ask you your perspective on what is going on with the situation with the Nigerian girls.
Well, you know, that I'm very concerned, to be honest with you, because you know, the more time elapses, I get really worried, because these are young people, number one, and being confined in wherever they're being confined, I'm thinking about, okay, what kind of food do they have? What kind of, hydration do they have on a regular basis? What are they drinking on a daily basis? What about medication? These are, young girls at an age where they're going to need some sorts of medication and, the things that young ladies need. So I'm very concerned about that, number one. Then number two, I'm very concerned when I hear talk about trying to rescue them. You know, it's not like we're missing one person or two or three people when we're talking a situation of more than 200 people. How are you going to rescue them without harming them or having them being harmed by their captors? So some of the pronouncements, the official statements being made by the government, I think some sound inappropriate because you're dealing with an individual, at least in terms of what I'll follow through the reporting, that may not be a person that's easy to negotiate with. So I think you should be very judicious in what you say in a situation like that, just for the safety of those young girls. And it's been since April. We're talking 2 months almost now, going on 3 months. So I'm very concerned.
Mm-hmm. You have an article at Black Star News where the headline says, Nigeria tries to stem protests over abducted girls.
Yes, I think what they were trying to do is because some of the police women, I think, had made a demonstration. And obviously I can understand how that got them very worried because if they have all the police services trying to demonstrate and even the armed forces starting to demonstrate, then you're going to have a situation that could quickly get out of hand and become uncontrollable. I think perhaps if they wanted to protest, maybe they should not be in uniform. I think if you're in uniform and you all start protesting at the same time, then you can quickly see how nobody would be there to maintain the peace and calm. And in a situation like this where everybody is very nervous, everybody is very frustrated, I think at least some people should be there ready to maintain the peace. But I can understand why they protested, because they're very disgusted with the way that the government had handled the situation. I mean, the girls were abducted in mid-April. When did we hear about it? It was sometime in May. So I think, in fact, it was a good thing that there was an international outcry because people identify with the plight of young people anywhere in the world, especially when they seem to be captive in a situation where their lives are in potential danger. It's only then when the government saw how people were concerned all over the world that they started taking what seems to be more appropriate action.
Yes. You know what's really ironic about this to me, Brother Alamadi? The fact that there is speculation that these girls might have been sold into slavery, and then it is a very awkward throwback to the period of slavery in our history, just the notion of people just vanishing.
That particular initial reporting, I didn't give it much credibility, because here's the deal. If these individuals that captured these young ladies were to, quote-unquote, sell them into slavery, and I'm not saying that they're not a situation like that where young people disappear and, in fact, they're sold off. That does happen in many parts of the world, including in Africa as well. But in this situation, if you were to get rid of them in that manner, then it means you are also exposed to danger, because now the Nigerian military, which is a very big military and actually in many respects very efficient and relatively very well trained compared to many African countries, they would then come after you without any hesitation because you don't have anything for them to be concerned about anymore. I think they would attack you with the full force and probably be able to eliminate them with the superior weapons that the army has. So I didn't believe that. And then I was not surprised when at some point after those reports we had heard, they started producing the the videos, which indicated that, in fact, they had not, quote-unquote, been sold. So that initial report, I didn't believe at all. I think I said to myself, if they did that, it means they would have nothing to protect them as well.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is behind it?
Go ahead. Nigeria has a very complicated situation right now. In the north of the country, where most of these people, the young men that join Boko Haram, are basically people that are unemployed. The unemployment rate is extremely high in that part of the country. That part of the country does not enjoy some of the benefits that they should be exposed to, given that Nigeria is one of the top oil-producing countries in the world. So when you have young people basically doing nothing, they're going to be recruited into many sorts of causes and movements that they should not be involved in. But since there's no alternative, and you can actually compare that to many situations where in our own cities here, where many of our youth tend to end up being involved in gangs and some other violent organization, it's really comparable to that. They have basically nothing to do, and then adults who come and frame it, sometimes abusing religion. They use religion to push their own agenda. So they get these young individuals to think that they're actually doing something which is justified, and that is actually approved by their religion. And if you have a steady supply of them on a regular basis, then you end up having groups like Boko Haram. So that's the motivation, because these young men must be under the influence of these adults to abduct girls that could actually be their own sisters. But the thing is that by that time they're doing that, it means they're not seeing these as people that could be their sisters. They're seeing them as targets, people that they could actually harm without any remorse, without any care about them at all. And that's what's happening. So part of the blame should actually go to the Nigerian government as well. I think Nigeria has a big problem. It's had it for a long time in terms of the proper accounting of the hundreds of billions of dollars that the country earns from oil and how to spend that money equitably amongst most of its population. That's not happened for a long time, and that's part of the main problem. Because, a few weeks ago on Gary Burr's show, I said, even if you eliminate this particular group right now, Boko Haram, so long as that situation of high rate of poverty, unemployment among the youth in that part of the country, so long as that continues to exist, what do you think is going to happen? There's going to be another group sooner or later doing pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the best solution to this right now would be in order to bring about a positive end to all of this?
Well, sadly, since they're in captivity and since they're young girls, I think that you have to negotiate with them. I don't see how you could use a military approach so long as those young girls are still captive. I think pretty much, sadly, they're holding the cards right now, the captors of these girls. And look at even a big military like the United States military with all the sophisticated gadgets that they have, the sophisticated military capability, they have to negotiate with the Taliban in order to retrieve that U.S. soldier that had wandered away and then got captured, who was just freed a few days ago. So it's very hard to come from a position of strength if the captors, have somebody that you will pretty much have to do anything to get out of line. And I hope that they're not delaying it because they don't want to negotiate with these individuals. That would be preposterous, because then what are you going to say at the end of the day if any harm should come to these young girls? Then what would have been accomplished? Oh, because we didn't want to negotiate with them? Because they would do the same thing again? Well, you know what? They're going to do the same thing again so long as the situation of poverty, as I said earlier, maintains among the youth in that part of the country. So just negotiate with them. There's no two ways about it. And make sure those girls come back to their homes in safety. And then get your act together. Make sure that the schools are much more secure and that the situation is going to be very hard to repeat. But also start addressing the economic conditions that produce groups like Boko Haram.
Let's continue to pray for a peaceful and positive end to all of this. Brother Alamadi, I wanted to ask you about your views on what's happening with the state of black media today. You know, we're talking right now on Blog Talk Radio, and there has been a great number, there have been a great number of shows produced on this particular medium. It has, mm-hmm. you know, provided an opportunity to give us a voice. The internet has given us a new chance to be able to tell our stories. And,
absolutely.
Yet and still, in terms of the print media, we are seeing the shrinking of popular magazines. What is it, Jet Magazine now is being shrunk down some more?
Correct. They have their last print, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then many papers have been disappearing for years. I mean, I used to write for First World News. It left within 4 years. I mean, we had our rise mm-hmm. and fall simply because we ran out of money. And,
right.
You know, there are other publications that I have written for that also just went belly up because there was no money to support it from the community or there wasn't enough from advertising, you know. What are your thoughts? Where are we now? Where are we going?
I think we're not in a very good space at this precise moment, but I think we're heading towards a better space. I think, for example, even during the worst part of the recession, when there was completely no advertising, you know, just about 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, we were able to survive. Unlike the City Sun, you remember the City Sun, right?
Yes.
In Brooklyn, the City
mm-hmm.
Sun was a great paper, but the City Sun, sadly, thrived at a time before the internet was a big thing. So the City Sun did not have a website. So when it collapsed in 1996, I believe, so long as you know, the economy had become tough and the advertising had gone down and it could not print on a regular basis, that was pretty much the end of it. But if it had a website, it would have continued until things maybe got better for the print edition, or it would have just continued online and still be a viable publication because it had a steady stream of news that you would not find anywhere. So people were feeding it because people respected the history it had. And that history could have continued online. So I'm saying this to contrast between then, 1995, and today. Today we have more options, but many of our establishments are still learning how to take advantage of this the new option. I think rather than having it's good to have many outlets, but we also have to find a way to share some of our information on a few platforms that everybody can go to. I would like to be able to share my articles in the Black Star with people in Chicago, people in California, people in Miami, people in D.C., you know, where people in all those cities can go to one site and say, okay, this news is coming from New York, it's from the City Sun, I mean from the Black Star, and I say the City Sun because I worked there many years, and they can say, okay, this is another article telling me what's going on in Miami, another article telling you what's going on in Compton, in L.A. That's what I would like to see. The same thing for the online radio as well. And that's how we can build our own national institutions and media that challenge, you know, the folks like CNN and all that.
Well, there certainly is an advantage to having an article that you can post on your Facebook page and know is going to get a lot of bounce. You know, that will definitely take it out of the vicinity and across the world. And so, I mean, there's an art and skill to navigating your way through the media waters for sure. You know, and for people who are reluctant, eventually they get a clue and realize this is the future, we're here. And, I mean, it's the present and the future, and that in order to really stay alive, you've got to become Internet media savvy, you know? I mean, with Twitter, you've got to have your Twitter account, your Facebook account, you know?
Right.
And,
absolutely.
And, like you said, a website. You've got to have a website. You know, if you don't have your .com
right.
or .info or whatever it is, then, you know, you're not really taken seriously.
Right. And, in fact, you seem to have some experience and knowledge in that. Now, as I'm listening to you, I'm saying, you know, I got to have you come to to the workshop that I conduct every Monday. I don't know if you know about my workshop, Guerrilla Journalism. It's called Guerrilla Journalism. And every Monday at Sankofa Academy in Brooklyn, I teach a free class for anybody that wants to learn basic reporting and writing skills. And I've been doing it going on 3 years now. And I have a group that's been coming consistently, about 15 to 20 people. And they've become pretty good now, actually. And they're going to be creating their own website and being able to report the news, you know, within their community. And I want to try to, like, duplicate this in cities around the country. And I want to start, you know, live streaming the lectures on a regular basis so people can set up the same kind of outfit that we have in Brooklyn and end up creating their own publication as well. So anybody that wants to come to that, it's every Monday except during a major public holidays from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Sankofa Academy in Brooklyn, and that's 1670 Fulton Street, or the A or C train to Utica Avenue. It's about a block away from Boys and Girls High School. And I would like you to come as a guest one of the Mondays when you're free. But the way you laid it out a few minutes ago, I'm saying, you know what, you should be doing a workshop so people can know how to take advantage of the new media space.
Well, actually, I was just sharing with some, our upcoming guest, La Chocolate Box, that I'm going to be presenting a workshop in the near future teaching artists about how to become media savvy and how to create your own publicity and how to understand and navigate your way through the Internet, because everything that you see up on all of my websites, my queenmotherimaku.info, akirukameticpeople.info, renegadewisewoman.com, and also I do the website for Refall Headquarters. I don't know if you've had a chance to visit the new site, Brother Alamadi, but that's my work.
I'm going to. As soon as I get offline with you, I will. But I could just tell by listening to you that, you know what, she's going to offer some knowledge when she comes to visit the class. So I hope we do able to fit you in the schedule one of these coming Mondays during the summer.
That would be a pleasure. It's vital. It is absolutely vital. I really, as a storyteller also, I'm a strong believer in our sharing and telling our own stories and from our point of view, which is why I got involved with the black media years ago in the first place, you know? And
I left the New York Times. I was a freelance reporter for the New York Times to go to the City Sun. Because I picked it one day and I read it and I said, you know what, this is a real paper. They're doing the kind of journals I want to do. I called up the publisher, the late Andy Cooper. I said, I'd like to write for you. He asked me how much I was making. I told him, I said, listen, I can only pay you like 25% of that. I said, that's not the point. The point is you're doing exactly what I want to do. So I relate with you and identify with what you just said a few minutes ago. We have to learn how to bring back and enhance and benefit our community. Sometimes it takes a little sacrifice, but if we don't build it, nobody's going to build it for us.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Brother Alamadi, what is the best way that people – wait, before I let you go, this is a perfect segue for our next guest, okay? Mm-hmm. Because I was going through your pictures, you know, because when I prepare for the show and I do publicity for it, I also create a collage for each of the guests. So when I was going through your pictures – I saw some modeling shots of you. Modeling. Did you use the model?
You're talking when I still had hair back in the other century.
Where is he? Is his phone?
That was a while ago.
Well, wait a minute. I only did it once,
actually. I did it because a friend of mine that I went to school with said, you know, he was putting a book together. And he said, you know what, I think you could model for a book. I said, what are you talking about? I've never done it. And then he took the pictures, and he said it was actually selected by other editors, not even him, who said it was worth being in this book. I said, if that's the case, let's do it.
There were some intriguing pictures. Listen, for those of you who are on Facebook, you need to go to Milton Alamani's pictures.
You're
those photos, you'll see some very interesting shots. I found them when I was going through your profile pictures. Okay.
Yeah, you just made my day. You know, you know how to really pamper your guests. Thank you.
Alamani, what's the best way that people can reach you?
The best way, I think people should go to blackstarnews.com, but most best of all, or they can send me an email as well, Milton, which is my first name, at blackstarnews.com, if you have any breaking news, something I need to know about, or if you just want to exchange some views, you know, feel free to reach me. But also, feel free to come to our weekly guerrilla journalism workshop. Just, you don't have to have any background in writing or journalism. Just come there open-minded, be ready to debate and argue with the class, and hopefully you can learn some skills and share some knowledge as well.
Brother Milton Alamani, thank you so very much for your time, and hopefully you'll come back and join us again in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, and have a nice evening. Peace and blessings.
Thank you. Peace and blessings to you. And that was Brother Milton Alamani of Black Star News. It is historic, and if you are not familiar, then you need to go to blackstarnews.com. And our next guest is on hold. I'm going to bring her in with one of her pieces here. This is A Chocolate Artistry of the Man here on Renegade Wise Woman Radio, www.renegadewisewoman.com, Artistry of the Man.
A brother boldly enters from stage left, full of mental conflict and latent transgression. A sister solemnly enters from stage right and declares, are you ready? Well, sit down, because I've got some questions. If the artistry of the man is to build me up as his queen, then why does he so often try to keep me down? Is his sole purpose to love me, relinquish me, then turn my whole world around? Why does he attempt to break my spirit, all promises, and our cherished family link? Or is his artistry something more dodgeful, more sinister, more complex than we could possibly think? The artistry of the man, huh? I tell you what, I will bestow upon you my artistry as a black woman of today. In return, you tell me with conviction and faith your take on this problem. By all means, please don't aggregate, repress, or dismay. Enlighten me. What is it that you were put here for? In this universe, on this planet, more precise, in front of me, on this day. My apathetic, callous, and contriving man. Didn't you know that breaking me couldn't be done by breaking my heart? For you'd have to dig a little deeper than just that internal part. Poor mathematics, dreams of good intentions and baseline terms of endearment. Ethics, you present it as quintessential work of art. Then with a soft or cold shoulder, you strip my joy, luck, motility, even before good intentions, dreams, and endearment could start. So where is the artistry in that kind of man? The definition of art is simple from what I understand. Art equates the quality, production. production, expression, or realm according to aesthetic principles. Don't understand how this logic became so damn incomprehensible. Art is what's beautiful or of more than ordinary significance. We could go even further and state that it represents the doctrine governing a branch of learning in this instance. What boundaries or extraordinary dilemmas have you sought to overcome, and how have you principled your life to tailor fit mine? Since this was expected of me, I now pose the question to thee and thine. When have you ever illustrated in-depth concepts as a founding teaching figure in my life? Misguided masculine mannerisms and shady aspirations. Failure, now a surname, your overbearing stripes. With so many discrepancies, I now ask, where is your artistry as a free-willed, loving, and responsible man? The one that which the rest of my life I anticipated and eagerly planned. Now, speak only on those things you know with absolute certainty. And before a defense is attempted, make sure it's done with a tongue that's been dipped in pure soul, fear, and dignity. You speak of awareness, yet your weak, insulated mind pollutes your thoughts. You speak of foundation, and yet refuse to support others who built themselves from naught. You speak of understanding and knowledge of self. Name some key points in your development as a black man. Please articulate your social, spiritual, and intellectual wealth. Like a complex, problematic game of chess. Are you really a champion of wisdom, my brother, if you have yet to play the best? A fading sun, now abandoned by his earth. Thus, a king to no one, this point I mournfully profess. Hypocrisy, I say, the artistry of the man. Is that art to break me down, feign love, then turn me around? True fine art is invaluable and imperfect and treasured in one's eye. The artistry of my man must be all the above. No drama, no bullshit, no enticing, feel-good lies. So I ask these questions before I concede. Cause bonding with you would end my artistry as a woman. A now mandated exit of my emotions. I dare not break this feminine creed. Oh, so now you have nothing more to say? Well, peace and eternal blessings, my brother, and make sure you have a good day. Sisters, when searching for a life partner, seek artistry and your choice of man. However, make sure he's aware that artistry is simply not an option, but a bona fide, lifelong soulmate plan.
That was a tough spot. Artistry of the man. I had the pleasure of seeing her perform this in person, and it was profound. I mean, first of all, welcome. The Chocolate Box, welcome. Thank you for being here on Renegade Wise Woman Radio. How are you this evening?
I am doing good. Good evening, Queen Mother Maku. I appreciate being up here. I'm so honored, and I'm honored that you actually played that piece. I was sitting here the whole time, and I was like, wow, it's so hard when you record things to actually listen to your own voice, but I really appreciate it wholeheartedly.
Do you find you get sick of yourself sometimes? I do.
It is really, really hard for me. Especially on video, I just do what I do, and I keep it moving. And I recently was forced to actually watch myself and, listen to myself. But I really appreciate it. That's actually The Artistry of the Man is one of my favorite pieces. It's written from, you know, from the heart, from real life experiences. And, you know, quick story with that, when I was recording it, I didn't want it to come across as being, you know, combative or confrontational. When I recorded that on the EP, there were four tracks, and each one was like a one-take wonder. It was like I was in and out. But that one, it maybe five or six times because, you know, no offense to the artist, but I kind of came across as like raw digger. And I know, like, in psychology, you know, a lot of people don't understand that if you want to have a conversation with someone and you want to be heard, the worst thing you can do is kind of stand over them and be combative. And I felt like in my mind the recording was there was a guy sitting in front of me and I'm standing over him, finger pointing, neck rolling, and the whole nine. And I said, I don't want to come across like that. But, right, you feeling me? Because I actually wanted men, I wanted the brothers to really hear what I was saying. So I actually softened it and brought it down a lot. Very much so, because I wanted it to be a conversational piece of, between a man and a woman about the status of their relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's very well achieved. I really do. And
thank you.
I was intrigued when I was watching your performance on Sunday. I'm so glad that you said today that you realized that I was really hooked into it and I was digging it. You know, because I know that I can look very intimidating. I know.
You definitely had a stern look on your face. And you know, for everyone out there, I told Queen Mother that I did, well, one of the things that I do, which I didn't tell you, is that I do focus, you know, as an artist, you try to find that pleasant face or someone who's really concentrated, and you at times will make direct eye contact with them. But I did notice, you know, this part I did tell you, I did notice the look on your face, and you weren't smiling, but you were concentrated, and I can tell you were paying attention to the words from one artist to another. That's something that I did see. So I definitely I had to seek you out afterwards to let you know that I was really appreciating your work as well.
Oh, well, thank you for that. But I have to say, I noticed that a lot of the other sisters, because of the fact that I was you know, trying to take in, and so they would look at me and then look away, and I said, "Oh, I'm that one," which means, you know, I mean, you don't look at the person who's got the serious look on their face because you don't know what they're thinking. You usually look for somebody who's smiling. So after that, I said, "Oh, let me soften up a little bit."
it was fine. I caught that. Trust me, I definitely caught that, and I appreciate it. I definitely do. You know, anytime I write, you know, when I started this, I did it for myself. You know, I really didn't have this goal plan in mind, and oh, I wanted to evolve into all these different things. I did it because yes.
Before we get to the health piece,
uh-huh.
Please explain to everybody where the chocolate box came from, and then we'll go from there into the health.
I know. Wow, whomever is out there, La Chocolate Box. You know what? Again, going back to this EP, recorded it maybe about 3 years ago. I went in, I did these recordings, and the producer and my partner at that time said to me, "Hey, we want you to do an introductory, like, you know, piece over this absolutely stunning, I mean, I definitely have to get up with the producer, this stunning jazz track, just introducing who you are and, you know, that your album's coming out, that sort of thing." So they asked me, they're like, "Well, what's your stage name?" And I said, "It's Rochelle." And they just, you know, flat face. They're like, "You don't have anything else?" And I kind of, in the back of my mind, I had this weird email address. La Chocolate Box started off as an email address, and it predated me doing spoken word by like 6 years. I started with spoken word about 2009, and I created this email address in 2003. And, you know, it was just something fun, but it started because I was doing a book report with my daughter, and the term chocolate-box is in the Webster's Dictionary, and I still have the dictionary, and it means sweetly pretty or overly sentimental. You know, I've always been told, "Oh, you're plain Jane pretty," you know, that sort of thing. Some kind of, you know, I'm just me. I stay in the corner. I'm good. You know, I observe, but I'm good. But I'm very, you know, emotional. I kind of intake other people's emotions and just kind of, you know, I'm very comforting when it comes to family and friends or whatever. So, and then when you add "la" to it, which is the you know, prefix for "the" in French and Spanish, it just means the sweetly pretty, overly sentimental one. However, over the years of doing spoken word and everything else that has evolved from it, it's become more of a personality. And I have to tell everybody out there, I really was not accepting of the name. I just thought to myself, it's going to be for now. I do this EP because they on me. I'm going to change it because I thought I didn't want people to think it had any sexual connotations behind it, and which most people do from the start until they get to know me or speak to me the first time. They're like, we understand it, you know. It's just like that crazy little, you know, funky box of chocolates you get, you know, the cheap ones, especially the cheap ones, Queen Mother, the cheap box of chocolates. They got everything in it, you know. You just never know what you're going to bite into. It's got that weird cherry, you know, the cream, the nuggets, whatever. And so me being an artist of all mediums, that really is me. So my chocolate box actually fits my personality and everything that's evolved, you know, in the last few years. So, which I'm sure you're going to talk about, just everything, the whole kit and caboodle.
Yes, it speaks to a real joy of life. Now, see, all of y'all who had your minds in the gutter, aren't you ashamed of yourself? and to find out also that you are such an amazing overcomer because of the fact that you were battling lupus. And yes, here you are. Listen, I would have never guessed that you had any kind of health problems the way you were strutting your stuff on the stage on Sunday. I'm telling you, tell us.
Official diagnosis with lupus, SLE, systemic lupus, at the age of 24, after going through several years of just them trying to figure out what was going on. You know, in the beginning, it was really...
Tell everyone what lupus is. What is lupus? Tell everybody what lupus is.
Lupus is an autoimmune disease where your body, the easiest, simplest way to say it is where your body kind of turns on itself. There are certain cells in your body, healthy cells, that would turn on to themselves, and it causes all types of symptoms, anything from fatigue, you know, joint issues, inflammation in your organs. I mean, you know, we all hear about, like, you know, arthritis or, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, that sort of thing, where it hits the joints. Well, with lupus, you can also have that same inflammation hit other crazy parts of your body, like your neck, your kidneys, your heart, your lungs, that sort of thing. And then there's like a host of other segued illnesses or viruses that can come about from lupus, like Sjogren's syndrome, which is something that I have, or vasculitis. You know, it's like the inflammation of certain, you know, veins and it can cause a lot of pain, you know, and it's not really good because a lot of times it causes really bad headaches. It's in your brain. It could cause like the gray matter, you know, kind of go a little funky. And Sjogren's syndrome is when you have the drying of the eyes. Right, exactly. You don't have the ability to produce tears. And the one thing that I really, I mean, I'll talk about lupus all day, but I don't talk about Sjogren's because it kind of, that's the one thing that I'm still finding it hard to get over, the fact that I can't cry. Now, I get the emotions, I get the stuffy nose, I get the red eyes, but I have not been able to produce tears. And, you know, you think, well, why would you want to cry? You know what? Sometimes you really just want to get it out, and I can't produce the tears. I think the first time, I'm not sure if my sister is listening or my family, that I realized it was a problem was at my grandmother, my great-grandmother's funeral. You know, here I am looking like this hard ass for my language. You know, eyes red, but there's no tears. And I actually finally talked to my doctor, and he explained to me. So, I mean, it's little things like that that you got to overcome every single day, you know. But, yeah, it's an autoimmune disease. It's not, people oftentimes confuse it with AIDS, and AIDS or you know, that sort of thing comes from an outside entity, whereas lupus is something that you're born with in your genes. It's just something that you can't pass on to anyone. It's just something just like high blood pressure, diabetes, you know, or any of those other illnesses. It's just something you're born with. Most of the time the gene remains dormant, but it's just your body attacks itself and it causes all types of things to go on. So in my family, rheumatoid arthritis and lupus is like a running factor.
Okay, so you were 19, you said. Was that right, 19?
No, well, when I first, When I first started with the symptoms, I actually was 17. It was about 2 weeks before my graduation. I had a seizure. And my mom, if you out there, ooh, poor lady, I feel so bad for her. I came home from school one day and just had a seizure, literally just had a seizure. And, you know, from there, it was just like years of just not feeling well, not knowing what's going on, fainting, you know, joint pain, just nothing, just having no clue. I was tested for Lyme disease several times, fibromyalgia. I was also tested for that a couple of times. Finally, after a slew of, you know, different tests, they assessed that I had lupus, and as well one of the defining factors of my lupus, because every person is different when they have it. Everyone has that one thing that affects them differently. I have rheumatoid arthritis and as well other, like I said, other associated illnesses to it, like Sjogren's.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that had to be devastating, especially being so young. And you were a dancer. You are a dancer. I mean, you had a very strong desire to make a career as an artist. So what has it been like for you? And gosh, we've got like about 5 minutes. What has it been like for you to overcome all of that? I mean, you had medication battles. You had struggles.
Medication.
With your body.
Oh, please.
You know, I think
yes. I
ahead,
you know, in the beginning, just some of the medications I was taking caused me to gain over 100 pounds. So you go from being a dancer, being a, you know, in the fashion world, doing all these fashion shows and being body conscious to all of a sudden gaining all of this weight. Then my functionality just diminished. You know, I go from dancing and doing this whole backup thing here and there, doing fashion shows, to completely come into a grinding halt. I remember one of the last fashion shows that I did prior to really just stopping for several years, I sat after the show was over with, I just sat in the corner and smiled the entire time, and people didn't realize that I couldn't even lift my arms. Like, it was just that bad. I was in so much pain. And I realized, you know, I have to slow down for a while. I took a lot of time off. I went through the whole, you know, the system and, you know, just trying to get disability, you know, medications, trying to make sure rent was paid. I remember at one point in time my mom said to me, you need to, because my mom, she worries. She said, you need to move out of that house. And I said, no, y'all need to come help me, okay, because I refuse. In my mind, I thought this is temporary. Now, I didn't know what I was talking about at that time, but I thought, and I figured if I can just think positively, I have to find a way to get away from this. You guys come to my house. There were little things like so many people, friends, family, all had keys to the house. I lived upstairs. One thing that, you know, I really don't talk about that often is I actually every night would make sure somebody's phone number was pre-dialed because I was single. I was a single mom at that time when it really got really bad. Because at some point I took a break. From high school. I didn't go right away to college because I was sick. I became a mom at the age of 20, and then, again, I had my son at the age of 23, and that really blew me, like put me like into full-fledged flare-up with the lupus. So from that point on, here I am, a young single mom who didn't go to college, who was very, very sick, whose family was like, you need to move out. I'm thinking, no. No, that's not happening. I'm staying right here. Please come and help me. So I wanted to maintain my independence. I did child care for several years to supplement my income. I didn't take young, super young kids, except for my friend's daughter. Hey, Nakia, if you're out there listening, my best friend Kim Merrill, she lives in Atlanta right now. But what I did was a service. I lived in a community where it was low-income apartments, and there were parents who went to work, who came home. They would go earlier than the school bus and then come home at 5, 6 o'clock at night, 2 or 3 hours after the school bus. So my business mind thought, why not market this and try to make some extra cash as before and after care service for school-age kids? And that's what I did.
Yes.
Oh, I did that. I did that for several years. And you know what? It worked. These were people who lived in buildings right next door to me. It was a service. And you know what? I made it happen. So, you know, I've always had that business mind. But as soon as I felt better, I was a fighter. I didn't necessarily listen to all my doctors because I feel that quality of life is more important than anything else. If I feel, just me personally, that a lot of times these doctors push off medication onto you, you are just a guinea pig. As long as you realize you are a guinea pig, you have a voice, and you need to be concerned with your quality of life, not the here and now. The here and now may make you feel good. Anyone could take pain pills, but, you know, I'm sorry, you were saying, Queen Mother?
No, I said you're right, you know, because, I mean, I've shared my epilepsy journey with my audiences for a long time, and let me tell you, I'm not telling everybody to go off medication. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what's true for me, okay? Those years I was on medication, I was jacked up, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel really bad for a certain part of my children's youth. You know, this was like from their mid-teens to their early college years, because I was zonked, okay? I was walking, I was functioning, you know, but, I mean, there's a lot I don't even remember. I mean, truthfully, it's horrible. It's really horrible,
it's some,
you know?
Things out there. It's some medications out there that you may feel good now. 5 years later, you know, your organs are deteriorating. You know, you have fissures in your intestines, or you have to have a colostomy bag at the age of 25 or 27, and I think that's ridiculous. And then, you know, I not that I knock any doctor out there. Trust me, I appreciate everything they've done. But while you're on a golf course somewhere, I am absolute. My life is, you know, is ending slowly. Over the course of 30 years, it's just slowly. I just wanted more for myself. I just wanted more for myself. And when I started feeling better, I used to pray all the time, Queen Mother, when I was home and just, you know, couldn't come up and down the stairs. I'm just stuck in my house. To me, it was no different than being in prison. I thought to myself, you know what? I can't live like this. I prayed every day. I didn't pray to win the lottery. I didn't pray for a good man. You know, I didn't care about none of that. All I wanted back was my mobility and my independence. That's it. Mm. You know, because with mobility, I could do all the artistic things that I love to do. I am a designer. I not only design clothes, I sketch it out, I draw, I paint, but I actually sew. I get down and I do pattern making. I actually make my own patterns. I am a photographer. I like to, you know, sculpt clay. You know, I write poetry. I dance. I love music. I even play around with some music edits whenever I, you know, I need to do something special for a show. So I try. I do it all, and I don't do it because I'm like, hey, you know, look at what I'm doing. I'm trying to be this multimedia star. I did it because I love doing it. I just love it. To me, that's, you know, as I said to Queen Mother earlier, I think that, you know, when people talk about, you know, the purpose of life, in one word, is balance. That's it. You balance the things that you need against the things that you want. And provided everything is on the same plane, it's safe, you're happy, you're doing good things, you're not hurting anybody, you're not insulting anyone, why not? That's how I feel, you know.
That's so very true. And, you know, I noticed on your fan page, you should mention the fact that you do have a fan page. And there is a link for those of you who are on the Blog Talk page. There's a link for facebook.com/lovechocolatebox. There's a picture that was taken by a guest from last week who is a beloved person to me, Peter Seaton, otherwise known as Rain or Rainmaker. That's a hot picture
you
took.
Oh, my goodness. Peter and I, yes, we did a show together at the Ashton & Simpson Sugar Bar in Manhattan, and my sister was there. My sister is a stand-up comedian. Her name is Amira. She's Candy Girl of Comedy. So I don't know. It's no relation to La Chocolate Box. It's completely and totally random. But we were there, and, you know, I said to my sister, because just random, hey, when this is over with, let's just go on the city street and do a photo shoot, just because. You know, so my sister was like, okay, I'm down. You know, the jacket that I have on in that picture is from my clothing line. My clothing line by the way is called Go Gay Fashions. And that jacket is a refab jacket from the refab line. Now, Go Gay Fashions is original pieces, but the refab line is when I go into the thrift stores and I find something I like, and I'll tear it apart and put it back together.
Refurbishing, refurbishing, yes. I mean, I specialized in that. I was in my 20s.
The refab, uh-huh. So,
yeah, yeah. You're gonna have to come back and share with us more about launching a fashion line and so forth, because to me, that's really intriguing. And I know there are a lot of artists out there who have that talent and who want to have more of an understanding of what that's like. And just in general, because fashion touches all of us, whether you like it, you know, to think of it, you know, in that way or not. For you who just puts on a pair of jeans and a T-shirt every day, the truth is, you decide what pair of jeans you're going to buy. You decide what T-shirt you're going to put on, because all of us, in some way or another, consider our bodies to be a canvas. And when you decide, and you are adding life and color to that canvas. So so clothing affects us. Otherwise, we'd have a lot of giddy good divers walking around out here. And so I would love for you to come back and share about that. And also, if you could just very quickly, as you're giving your contact information, talk about upcoming projects that you have.
Okay. Again, yes, I can be reached on Facebook. I do have a fan page, La Chocolate Box. That's L-A Chocolate Box, no spaces. I had coming up in June, I am hosting and performing at the 9th Annual BPC Poetry Fest. It's a 3-day poetry festival in and around the Atlanta area, founded by Mark Goggins out of South Carolina. Our website is www.bpcpoetryfest.com. I host Sexy Saturdays every third Saturday of the month, Cafe Z and Union. I have 3 fashion shows coming up at the end of the year, and as well I work as a correspondent for DPTV Networks out of Harlem. That's, again, brought to you by Douglas Wilburn and Shamari Green of Gang Green Productions. So we do red carpet events. Hello. How are you? No, we've had the opportunity of working with a lot of different events, and I've been honored and blessed with, you know, interviewing a lot of celebrities, and just, you know, it's just been such an amazing thing, and all of this came about because of poetry.
This is really something. I tell you, when I was watching, I told a Chocolate Box earlier that when I was watching her on Sunday, I said, this young sister's got a story. I don't know what it is, but she's got a story. And the reason I could tell was because, you know, I've been in the business since I was 15 years old. And you can tell people who are just trying too hard, who are trying to be something that they're not, who are putting on, who are actually really shallow but trying to come off as though they're deep. And then there are those who have depth and real life experiences that are challenging and that grow you up, that you bring to your performance. Even if you're doing comedy, if you're doing something that's supposedly light, whatever, you can see that. And you came across as a rich and textured, talented person. Not just a talented person, but very rich and multi-layered. And I truly appreciate that about you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
I'm so glad that you were here with us on Renegade Wise Woman Radio. And I look forward to your coming back. And again, thank you. We're going to go out briefly on an interlude by La Chocolate Box. And
thank you. Have a good night.
You are tremendous. You are just wonderful. And if for those of you who are trying to get to her Facebook page, and if you're on my Facebook page, go to my Facebook and you will find, I just clicked like today for her fan page, La Chocolate Box. Okay? All right. Much love to you, and I look forward to working with you again in the future.
Yes, peace and blessings.
She. Live, love, laugh, and set free. Feel me. Hee-hee, so achy, with wanton glee, permit to sightsee my silken bush pea. Ooh, la-la, wee-wee, see-see. Sweet nectar, fish-like, love honey,
guide my species to thy staff tree. Intense delight in thee. So fine his mind. One of a kind. His pleasure, my business. Bottom line, refined, design, malign, and grind. Sublime. This body, his cosmic dime. Hee hee. My passion marquee. Supernatural, grand prix. She. Full grown, black cherry. Come, pick me. So tasty. Sugar pudding, licky. Pretty kitty, bubbly. Like pink Chablis. Got this love hangover. Come see about she, Mr. Mocha MC. Ooh, la la, oui, si. Je t'amène, mon baby. Protéger, amour. Mon complètement. Mary Berry. Si vous. He plus she. Intertwine, recline, then crush. In line, celestial body soar, then climb. Destination, cloud nine. So fine.
That was La Chocolate Box, an interlude. Ooh. Here on Renegade Wise Woman Radio, and we're ready for our next guest. You know, I didn't mention to La Chocolate Box that I want her cousin to come on the show too. That chick was funny. she was the only comedian who was on that night, and she was hysterical. You know, and I mean, when she came on, actually, I got up and went to the back of the lounge because I said I do not want to be in the line of fire. I don't want her ringing on me for nothing. But anyway, okay, we are ready for our next guest, and I can tell you already, I want him to come back. You know, Baba Zaid, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Welcome, Baba Zaid Muhammad. This man is dear to me. I tell you. you know, let me just say, in addition to Baba Zaid being a very well-known and respected activist and speaker and poet and spoken word artist, this man knows how to be a friend. Let me just tell you, because there's an article that I posted when we first launched Renegade Wise Woman magazine. I posted about my battles with the utilities companies, and I went through the entire winter with no daggone gas heat because I got slammed with somebody else's bill, and I refused to pay it. And the one brother, the only brother I can say, no, there were two. There were two brothers. One is my local committee man who was constantly checking on me, but the one who was really persistently checking on me to make sure I was okay was Baba Zaid Muhammad. And I have him named in the article. And, you know, it's at times like that that you really find out who the real men are in your life, who the real brother friends are, you know, and for the times when it was really cold over here and I'd get a text saying, Queen, are you okay? And I'd say, I'm tough, I'm a warrior. And you'd be like, I know, but it's cold. Can you please get somewhere warm?
Yes.
Baba, how are you, my dear brother?
Well, after that, let me just say I'm glad you're all right because, I want to salute you because, you know, and all of that, I mean, the high point of the story is that you stuck it out. You know, I was telling you to pack your stuff and go hang out with one of your daughters for a while or whatever, and you just did not have to subject yourself to that. You know, and I was really, really worried about what that could have done to your health. So So check it out and you won. You know, you able to obtain that. So I salute you in spite of my own, you know, reservations is worrying about your well-being, you know. So it's just humble that, you know, you're here and that you were willing and even thought of me to invite me in your circle as you have for this evening. So I'm humbled and just to be here.
Oh, thank you. Tell us about your journey in activism.
Wow, well... the short version is this. It's been a long journey, but it was, you know, pretty much the hard way. You know, literally, I'm going to X everything in terms of the things that young black men get caught up in the streets. And I was literally in the middle of this is December 1977. I was literally in the middle of the drug transaction. I wasn't Baba Zaid then. I had a very different kind of the lifestyle. And I stole a book called The Autobiography of Malcolm X in this drug transaction. And at a time in my life on the streets when things were very perilous, and I was definitely on the verge of some, you know, bad thing, or we say back then, I was in the ballpark of taking a fall. But that book, nothing but the grace of the God of the ancestors, that book was you know, a divine intervention in my life. It saved my life. And it was the key vehicle for me turning around my life at that point. And my activism, I was still, you know, a young man. I was still in high school, and my activism really started in earnest in the community then as a student. It's trying to raise awareness for our community and trying to combat the very thing that I was doing just on the flip side of that behavior, you know, the drama and damage that comes with the influx of, you know, drugs coming in our community, you know. So that's how it all started, and I've been on this path for quite some time. Shortly after the college student, you know, I became more of a Pan-African in my orientation in my college days because I ran into a group of students where I was at school who were students of Amiri Baraka as kids. And of course, in that setting, I also met Amiri himself. And so I got plugged into the Pan-African side of Malcolm's persona after getting myself cleaned up and straightened up on the Islamic or the Muslim side of his activism. And then just leaping ahead in the late 80s when I was really getting in gear with my writing at that point, and I probably should have stayed in gear, I hosted what became the first book party for the autobiography of Asada Shakur, Asada's book, in the country at the Newark Public Library. And I created a vehicle for frontline artists do that, to push or to remind artists that we've always had a relationship between our artistic traditions and our struggle for freedom, justice, and equality. So it started there. And that put me, of course, in line with the Panther tradition. And I was embraced and trained up by a train of elder Panthers from the New York chapter of the Black Panther Party, especially the late Safir Bukhari and Daruba Ben Wahad, both who had been released from prison shortly after that whole thing, and I've been in the Panther tradition ever since. And I guess most people know me now since 1999 when I came into the new Black Panther Party when I was asked to do so by my late friend and brother, you know, Khalid Abdul Muhammad. And when he went to the land of the ancestors, his successor, Malik Zul Shabazz, asked me to stay on as a national officer and to actually take on the task of being the party's first minister of culture. And then so this was a coming around of what I was much younger to what I now am been and have been trying to be as a elder, as young folks are reminding me that I'm very much am these days. So that's the long and short version. You know, I started with Malcolm and the Panther tradition, you know, embraced me. And I've been on this walk ever since.
You have the privilege of having been involved with the original Panthers, yes?
Yes.
And now you're in the new Black Panthers. And, you know, there has been talk for a long time that the new Panthers are nothing like the original Panthers. What are your views on that?
Well, there are differences. I mean, I you know, we felt, and from the very beginning, now, I have to say this. Now, the new Black Panther Party started in 1989 by a brother named Aaron Michaels out of Dallas, an ex-soldier who came back and saw, came back to his home area and saw an insurgent activity of the Ku Klux Klan and organized some brothers, some ex-soldiers to, you know, bring their training to bear to protect their people. And then it was out of that that the party was born. But out of respect for the work that the party did when they were on the scene, it was a very unique chapter in the history of our struggle. He decided that we should not call ourselves the Return of the Black Panther Party, but, you know, a continuum of the tradition, but facing the particular challenges of our time, so we would become the new Black Panther Party. So that's the first thing that needs to be said. We've also, I mean, just like the party was demonized in the media during its day, you know, we were demonized in our day. I mean, we understand it, and it's something that we just accept. When the late Khalid Abdul-Muhammad came in to the party as his first national chairman, Khalid really made the organization a truly national organization. It was at the time of we were preparing for the Million Youth March and what that would become. And many young people came out of the Million Youth March from around the country into the new Black Panther Party under Brother Khalid's leadership. And it, you know, produced an organization that had several chapters in the South into a national organization that had over 35 chapters at the time of his passing. And what Khalid also understood, that we weren't, you know, exactly the same, that we were not exact copycats. Khalid is an original revolutionary thinker in his own right, did a restatement of the 10-point platform of the new Black Panther Party that reflects the growth and the knowledge base of our knowledge base in the nationalist tradition and paradigm that reflects what has emerged in Black historical and scholarly and cultural circles and political circles since the time that the Panther Party was no longer on the scene as a consequence of COINTELPRO. For example, the emergence of Afrocentricity is an important embrace and recognition by the party, the new Black Panther Party. We say from the beginning, you know, we bring the culture in right from the very beginning, that we believe in the high moral and spiritual code of our ancestors in the Igusa Saba. And, you know, that's something very different, but yet not at all taking anything away from how our elders did back in the day when they were more of a Malcolm, Maoist, you know, orientation with what they were doing. We accept what they did wholeheartedly, and we're just adding this piece because we think that the emergence of this reclamation of our thought and our culture that predates those traditions that were embraced in the 60s that we were looking at that time, are important to embrace to really enhance our sense and our presence, our identity, and then our own organizational contribution to the notion of self-determination. So we're different in that respect, you know. Mm-hmm. But we stand squarely, proudly, on the shoulders mm-hmm. of those who wore that uniform and then whose sacrifices were bathed in the blood of battle, wearing those uniforms so that many of us could do some things and take for granted some things that just weren't possible during that time.
You are involved in a lot of different groups. Besides the New Black Panther Party, you are part of the Newark Anti-Violence Coalition. You are the Minister of Information for People's Organization for Progress. And you also are part of the Akeru theater family, Akeru Afrohemian ensemble. We'll get back to that. But with the last 6 minutes that are here to go, you also are involved with the Popcorn Kids. And last week we had Sister Sandra Hayward on, founder of the Popcorn Kids, People's Organization for Progress, Children of Right Now. And you bring the historical piece to the children, and also you teach them a lot about traditions. Talk to me about that for a moment.
Well, as you also had the Malcolm F. Commemoration Committee, because that was my first organization out of all of them. And then for all of those organizations, primarily I do press. That's just primarily what I do. But the Popcorn Kids was, you know, I've struggled with my contemporaries that, you know, one of the problems has been with our movement in its so-called post-civil rights, post-black power era, has been the problem of these so-called leaders not willing to embrace and train and prepare a next generation. You know, they're quite comfortable with being seen as the leaders, but they're not doing anything to present or to develop a next line of leadership and to expand leadership talent and potential and to organize that in our community. And our community suffers as a consequence of that. Something, you know, with even more serious implications when we start talking about electoral politics and state politics on the African continent itself. We've always had these issues that we really need to deal with. And there's this, you identify Sandra's sister with nothing but a big heart, not a whole lot of experience, not a whole lot of, you know, professional training or political training or any of that, but just a big heart, willing to embrace our kids, who are not afraid to embrace the kids that she was in contact with, that could see them trying to contend with some things that quite frankly, we were blessed not to have to deal with, because the violence that we see on our streets now is not as prevalent when we were younger as it is then. And she just came up, you know, we need to do something. She just literally just started taking a handful of kids around to positive activities with this notion of, you know, this is what we're trying to do for these kids right now. And then we came up with this thing where if you come to a People's Organization for Progress meeting, there's an agenda that is presented to everyone at the beginning of the meeting. And at the bottom of the agenda are this thing called dates to remember for that given month. And I said, look, we can take the dates to remember, make them age-appropriate in presentation, and do a monthly program. You know, we started out at the Public Library, but it was the Irvington Public Library that truly embraced us. And that's where mm-hmm. it developed its rootedness and has really taken on its own identity. And it's something that we all take quite personally. We're really very proud that we have this connect with these children and their parents, those that come. And then we're in that library, that the library embraces, the children's department in that library. Sister Nana Chima and her staff, you know, have been very warm and very good to us. And those are the kind of things that I think, you know, those organizations that are about social justice, you know, need to develop, need to look at ways to do similar kinds of things. Not be the same, but certainly, you know, similar in a meaningful way to embrace and to have some kind of hands-on training with our young.
Mm-hmm. Baba Zaid?
Yes, ma'am.
You know, my call was just dropped. I'm just calling back in. We have less than a minute left. And here's what I would like to do. I would like to ask you if you can come back next week and share your poetry with us, and we can talk about the artist side of your life. Would you be willing to do that?
That's very rare. Okay. Sure, certainly.
I appreciate that. We have 47, 46, 45 seconds. And I'd like to thank my guests today, Baba Zaid Mohammed, and Milton Alamadi, and also the Chocolate Box. And I would like to thank my correspondents,
Hello.
Will Edwards and and also Sashed. And so we look forward to you coming back next week, Baba. And thank you to everyone. Really positive and empowered week. You are the change. Be a hellraiser. Get a little uppity. And be the difference.
Appreciate that.
Nereya.
Nereya.